All right, everybody, welcome to Growth Mindset Week. We are getting you kickstarted here on a Tuesday with another connection activity this week brought to you by K-Dub. He's going to give you a connection activity with student-led conferences. We're excited to have you. Take it away, K-Dub.
Let's do it. All right. So first thing about this, the impetus for this came from another teacher, and at the school I was at 5 years ago, Canyon Park Junior High, now Canyon Park Middle School, up in Bothell, Washington, our alma mater, actually. We did a student-led conference with the parents as like the final thing that students did. It was their final assignment at the end of the year. The last week they spent kind of putting together a folder and presenting that to their parents. And that was really, really powerful. If you have the opportunity to build that in as a last step of this process, I would highly encourage you to do that. It's immensely rewarding as a teacher to see that conversation take place between a parent and or guardian and a student. And the parents are super appreciative of that as well. And a lot of the kids actually really end up enjoying it. So the current school that I'm at, that's not possible for a multitude of reasons. But if it is possible at your school, I would highly encourage you to work yourself up to that process. But for me, with student-led conferences, this is not, you know, a lot of the other connection activities that I've talked to you guys about have been more like short, kind of warm-up type activities. This is much more of a time-intensive couple times a year kind of deal rather than, you know, than like a once-a-week kind of thing. And so the way I've set these up is that we do them in the first month as kind of like a follow-up to some of the getting-to-know-you activities that we've done and surveys and things like that, where I'm going to sit down with each student during an independent work time. My classroom is very well set up for this. I have like a couch off to the side by my desk so that they can sit and relax. And then, you know, kids are doing an independent work during this time period. We have block schedules, so it's easy to build this in. And I just call kids up, and it's like, a, you know, some kids it's a 2 minute conversation. Sometimes it's closer to, 5 or 6 minutes. But so again, we go that first month as like a Kickstarter, and then we do it every quarter after progress report grades or semester grades come out, just as that's a good time, right? We have some data there to work with. So that's why we do the times that we do. The prep work side of it, I really think it is really important to make sure that this doesn't feel like something that you're just kind of throwing on top of part of your curriculum, whereas like kind of like an extra day in the year. So like some things that I would do for some prep is either give the kids a folder at the beginning of the year that is clearly designated for this purpose. I will flag assignments often for my students, like, hey, this would be a really good one for you to save for our conferences as a reference point for whatever reason. And sometimes I'll explain why I think that to them. So either give them like a tangible, like a folder to put it in. Or one thing I've updated in the last 3 years is I make all of my students get a 200 sheet spiral notebook that stays in the classroom in a crate that has their name on it. Like it's very easy to keep organized. And so I just tell them when we're setting up our notebooks at the beginning of the year, the very first chapter in our notebook is our student conference chapter. And so it's a place where they know they're going to go back and do journal entries or put assignments in and things like that. But having it set up in advance, like, hey, we know we're going to be tracking this. There's a place to keep track of all that information. And then letting them know what the purpose of it is, right? Like part of the prep is like, hey, this is important because for me, kind of connected to grading is like, I'm interested in your growth over time. I'm not necessarily interested in your average over time. And so like, this is a really good way for us to kind of measure that and look at that. And then another piece of prep that I have found really valuable, I got this idea from a English teacher in our department who used to do something similar at a different school. We have an accountability partner, and I'm a big believer in the gradual release of responsibility. And I think accountability partners are a really good way to set this up where they have somebody else that they're going to kind of check in with on what their process is. So that's kind of the prep work behind it. And then what do we actually talk about in our conferences? I honestly, this has changed almost every single year. I will take something out or add something new into what we're going to focus our conferences on. But we're going to talk about like, what are your academic strengths? What are your interests? How can we use those to make you as successful as possible in this class. And then like, we need to have an honest conversation about like, hey, your evidence-based writing is still not where it needs to be. You know, what are some things that we've done in the last few units that have kind of created some hurdles for you? Or where do you think there's some places that you can get some extra support for that, so that we can really make sure that like we have a waypoint so that the student and I are actually having a conversation about those things rather than me just flicking through a grade book and noticing that this is quote unquote an issue, right? Is that we're actually having a conversation about it and moving forward with it together. And I think that to me is the thing that's powerful about the student-led conference, is that it's the student who is now taking ownership of the process of the learning. And what I find is really interesting, Tim, I bet you have some similar stories. It's actually really hard for a lot of my kids to focus on what they're doing well. And so I've actually had to do a lot of updates in the last few years to really get them to focus on, hey, like, what are you doing really well? And how can we build on that moving forward? I think that's something that's become really valuable for a lot of my students.
Right. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Right. And I think this is true for a lot of us. Like, when we are asked, like, how do we think we're doing? A lot of us are much more critical of like what we're doing. And I think that's one of those things that I feel like we talked about this before too. Like, when we do some of that reflection work, like most of us, when we do that self-grading, if we've built it correctly, a lot of us are going to grade ourselves lower than where we're actually performing, and having that be an element to it. So I love that you had the students lead that. And one of the things you spoke to that I think is so important in general, and obviously it fits perfect into this week, is the idea that you're not worried about where they are in this moment, or what their overall grade is or their score, but you speak directly to the idea of, I want to know how much they've grown. And so I think that's like the wizardry of like being a really good teacher, is making a student who's already getting like 90s plus and getting them to continue to grow. And then also getting that student who's like borderline given up on themselves and getting them to grow just as much or more, because they've got so much more space to go, and rewarding that and celebrating that and letting them identify that, I think is so awesome. So,
well, I think one of the things that comes up in so many different ways in history class, right? Like, we talk about this idea of justice as fairness and understanding. There's also a great video from a couple of years ago, like talking about privilege, where like a guy stood with like a $100 bill, like 100 yards away from people, and said like, you know, step forward. If you come from a two-parent household, step forward. If this, okay, now let's race for the $100, right? Like, I think the thing that one of the things that motivated me to start doing the conferences as a year-long process is recognizing that so many of my students were starting from a different place. So the growth is really like, okay, where did you start from? And then where are we moving to? And then the other thing that I will still say that as I've gotten better at focusing on the growth, what has happened is that my student-led conferences have actually become narrower. When I first did them, we were looking at like, okay, we're going to talk about all six of your classes. And I almost like turned into like a counselor, which is not my job, right? So that was really like, good at. So like sometimes it was useful because I was getting useful information that I could pass on to folks. But I find that even in the narrow conversations, I will still learn something about a student that is valuable to pass on. But now we're really focused on like, in this class, where are we at? Where are we going? And then let's talk about how can I help you individually to get there? And it kind of speaks to something that you touched on last week with the idea of like, yeah, we have students that have individual education plans, but in an ideal world, which we all know we don't work in, we would have individual plans for every kid. And this is the closest I've been able to come to getting to that. And so I'm at least aware of, okay, Johnny doesn't like to write. So whenever possible, let's create opportunities where he doesn't have to write to show his learning. And we need him to grow there. So we can't just have an avoidance strategy. Like, let's create some scaffolds to make sure next time we're doing an essay, I'll make sure I give him an outline that maybe nobody else is getting, or, you know, maybe just make it available and he knows that it's there, is kind of another change, right? Like, that's a big thing. It's like to make it available to everybody, and the kids who need it will know from the conferences that that's something that's there for them.
Right. How do you get your accountability buddies to know those starting points as well as you know those starting points? Like, do you have joint conversations, or is it they're just there for each other randomly paired up, or how does that whole situation look?
So really the evolution, that's a great question. The evolution of the accountability partner really came from a student request a couple years into doing this of when we were still just doing the parent-student-led or the student-led parent conferences at the end of the year of like, hey, we could use some practice before I do this in front of like an audience, right? Like I'm nervous about doing this in front of my parents. And so it started out with like, okay, go ahead and do it with someone that you're practicing with. And then same thing, like I brought that idea of practice before you come and meet with me, like get your folder organized, kind of go through your talking points with someone. And then just it kind of naturally grew that that person, like we would be very intentional about that choice. I would do some lead up teaching about how to be a good listener and not to try and silver linings things or give advice in terms of like how to change the outcomes, but just to like listen, be like, oh, hey, I noticed this, or I wonder about this. And the big thing that the accountability partners kind of evolved into was it was someone else that they were talking to about their education. And so it wasn't just with me. And so they had someone else who was checking in with them, because I think it's a natural thing of friends. Once you know that you have a friend that shared something that they're struggling with, it's like a natural thing for a friend to want to help you with that. At least that's been my experience with my students. So it did really evolve kind of organically over time.
Love that. Love that. I think this might need to be another connection activity we do in the future too. For the teachers who have not seen that video or have ever participated in like a privilege walk, There's a lot of phenomenal connection that can occur there, similar to the cross the line activity we've done in the past, but
yeah,
even more so with some of the specific questions, and then having that separation where you can actually like look back for those that have had the privilege and be like, holy crap, I've never looked back before. And having from the other perspective, like, holy crap, they're so far in front of me. Why do I even try to go get that $100? Right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Let's put that one in the docket in the future. I love that. So thanks for bringing that one up. The last thing I've got for you is obviously you talked about like the couches and things like that, which I know is from the past when you're not in your NTI vibe. things are a little bit different right now. I feel like because I know you so well, this is still something you're going to make happen, even with limited amount of time. How does this show up for you in NTI?
That's a great question, and I wish I was living up to your standards a little bit better. So first semester with kids that regrettably I'm not that aren't required to see me anymore, although I've reached out to a couple of them recently. We didn't really do it. We did kind of like a couple of minor versions of it. Like our school, our district has a required parent-teacher conference, like the 3 days before Thanksgiving is all parent teacher conferences that are like required by the district. So we did those. And so I did some prep that I think is more than other people do for those, but that was really it because I felt so pressed for time. But to your point, one of the big changes I'm making second semester is we were going not to get too into the weeds on social studies teaching, but we had a pretty rigorous chronological unit set that we were trying to get through. And again, we're completely remote. And so we took an 8-period or a full year's class and squished it in half to help the students with the organization. We just didn't get to everything. And I felt really pressed for time. I did way more teacher led instruction than I've ever done before. I cut out some of the connection stuff that I think is really valuable. Student conferences was one of the things that got left on the chopping block floor. That wasn't really even a conscious choice. It was just kind of something that happened as I was making decisions over time. And so one of the things I'm actually doing this semester is I'm reordering and reorganizing my units to create more time for these things, because I think it's something that I know it's something that I'm frustrated that we didn't do enough of last semester. So I'm retooling my whole first semester thought process to make sure that we make more time for stuff like this.
Nice. I think I would be in a similar boat. So don't beat yourself up. I have not done any of the conferences and reflections that I've done in the past either. Because with our hybrid schedule and just the way that the student behavior has shown up, they're really only learning new content when they're in front of me. And I definitely tried doing like the idea of teach something new even when they're at home, but a lot of them weren't doing that. So I was playing a lot of catch up, and yeah, it had similar vibe to you. It just, it's really difficult to get everything in that we're supposed to get in. But I'm stoked out of my mind that all my students are coming back starting March 3rd, I think it is.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's going to be a different, you know, there's mixed feelings and opinions.
Sure.
I've gotten both of my vaccine shots. So I'm not concerned about me necessarily catching it, but, you know, obviously a lot of students haven't had any chance to get that protection, but we're all going to be back in class 5 days a week. And I know that I'm going to be able to have those one-on-one conversations with the kids. I'm going to be able to do some of the things that I used to do when I would see them 5 days a week instead of 2 to 3 days tops a week. So I'm in the same boat with you. I'm going to be building more of these conferences back in. So
nice. And just so for those of you that are in the same situation, so I'm still in comprehensive distance learning. And as of yet, our district hasn't even set a date for even starting hybrid instruction for 9 through 12. So, and to be honest with you, both my students and I, for the most part, while we're all excited to get back to in-person when it's safe, they're all like, I don't really want to have to figure out another way to learn for like the last 6 weeks of the school year. Like, I'd rather just, like, most of the students have said, like, let's just stick with the CDL and start fresh next year. But anyways, for those of you who are wondering, like, okay, how are you going to make these changes? The strategy that I will report back to everybody on that I've adopted is, again, we have our students 2 days a week for live time for about an hour and a half, and then 3 days a week for 2 1.5 hour sessions, quote unquote, and then another 45 minute session of asynchronous time. And so the way I've kind of built things out, we're about 2.5 weeks in right now. We're doing very little academic stuff during our synchronous time. We're doing, everything has been connections, talking about classroom agreements, talking about empathy, talking about kind of like the bigger ideas of the course. And then I'm giving them some instructions and they're doing like practice formative assessments for me during their asynchronous time. But we're really going heavy with building connections during synchronous time right now, so that in a week or two, once those bonds are strong enough, I can kind of flip that and we can use our asynchronous time to do the connection work and do the assignments that are related to that, and then use the live time for class. And my logic behind that decision is that my students in first semester were really, really, I don't know if I'm allowed to use the word thirsty anymore. but they were
in the context.
Yeah. But they really wanted that connection, both with me and just with other people. And so what I found is that when I did asynchronous assignments that were about opportunities to get away from academia and be more connective based, I got like 95 to 98% like completion percentages on those things. And kids, like, we would have back and forth, right? Like, I would respond to something that a kid wrote and they would respond back, and it would be like 5 rounds the wheel with that. Whereas if I said like, hey, write a teal paragraph about why the Berlin Conference was, you know, another example of old white guys being assholes, like, I would get the paragraph, but like, the first of all, the work completion rate was closer to like 85 to 90% on a good day, right? Maybe closer to 70% on a bad day. And then like the back and forth about the work just wasn't there. And so I found that kids are hungry for the connection time, they will put more energy into it without me having to be there with them doing it. And so my hope is, right, we can't build connections during asynchronous time, so we have to build that during the sync time right now. And then I'll be able to hopefully parlay that into them tackling those things when we get to async time.
Perfect. I love it, man. Get hungry. Well, I appreciate the connection activity, and I know that the kids are benefiting from it, and everybody who takes the time to get some student-led conferences in their classroom will benefit from that connection piece as well. So,
yeah, absolutely.
We look forward to seeing you all back here on Thursday for our big idea and story time. Take it easy and always learn at a peak state.
Make it a great day. See you Thursday.